Hey, it's John Canzano. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe. And thanks to all the listeners and all of our sponsors who help make the Bald-Faced Truth the number one sports radio show in Portland. Enjoy.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth. John Canzano.
People don't like to hear the truth all the time. You know, people ask you questions, but they don't actually necessarily want to hear the answers.
Love him.
I mean, I like the guy. I listen to him every day.
Canzano, what's going on, man?
He's dead sexy.
I think he does a damn good job.
I'm going to be rooting for this young Portland team, which, you know, is a terrific team. You guys just have a terrific nucleus.
You pay attention to detail. That's why you're so successful.
I just think he's honest. Yeah. Straightforward and to the point.
You're bringing up something that's probably the average sports fan watching the game didn't pick up on.
I'm really glad to see that someone who speaks their mind is not afraid to tell it how it is.
He's a smart guy, just my dude, man. Yeah, y'all know him, man. I let my mother listen to him.
Hate him.
You don't want to get nobody a second chance. Trump.
To represent that as some sort of subterfuge by John Canzano, I would have expected far better.
He just sounds like an egotistical idiot.
He was rude, crude, and wrong.
Love to hate him.
Yo, John, I can't stand you. I can't stand you, but I come back every day to listen to the show.
Bald-faced truth teller.
Who is he to judge?
He can raise your eyebrows a lot.
I was angry. He just got my feathers that day big time.
Now, from the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
So New York Giants receiver Odell Beckham Jr. is probably one of the most polarizing figures in the NFL. Can we agree on that? This is a guy who revels in and profits from his celebrity, but then complains about the enhanced intention that goes with it. He is either one of the most liked or most hated athletes and might be on both lists. But it got me thinking about something as he's complaining after a minicamp practice that went down yesterday. He wore cleats to his minicamp practice, and he named several media outlets on the cleats in red letters. And he also met with reporters and said, look, no, I didn't boycott the voluntary offseason workouts because of my contract. And he's claiming that it's the holdout that he's not holding out on. And he's mad at the media for reporting about it, mad at all the attention that he's getting. And simultaneously, this is a guy who benefits greatly from all the attention that he gets. It got me thinking about something. There are athletes in sports who are loved and hated. And last night on Twitter, I tweeted out that Ashton Eaton, the reigning two-time most incredible, amazing athlete in the world, two-time Olympic decathlete champion, Ashton Eaton. On Twitter yesterday, I said, there's a lot of great guys in sports. I'd be hard-pressed to find one better than Ashton Eaton. It's true. I believe it. I see it. I believe in Ashton Eaton. I see that. But it got me thinking about athletes that you love and hate. LeBron James. You either love LeBron or you hate LeBron. There's no in-between on LeBron. He's a guy who splits the audience.
My third year here, and we haven't won every game. You know, we haven't won every finals, obviously. We've lost two of them. So, but like my, you know, like I've always told myself, if you feel like you put in the work and you leave it out on the floor, then you can always push forward and not look backwards.
LeBron James made the Forbes list of most popular and least favorite athletes. In fact, as recently as a couple years ago, he was the number one most popular athlete in the world. And by the way, and also the number one least favorite athlete in the world. Odell Beckham Jr.'s got to be on the list now if we put it together on this radio show. But I want to know who else you put on those lists. Who do you love? What athletes do you root for? I look at Ashton Eaton and I say, there's a guy you could get behind. Who is it on your sports teams that you say, this is my guy, or this is the lady that I root for? Serena Williams, certainly. Danica Patrick, Venus Williams, Ronda Rousey, Mia Hamm, Alex Morgan, Abby Wambach, who's since hung it up, Maria Sharapova, polarizing, but certainly one of the most popular female athletes of all time. Who do you root for? And who do you like? And also, who do you hate? Like, who can't you stand? Because you either love or hate this guy as well, quarterback Tom Brady.
I love working hard. I love being a part of the team. You know, I love working toward a common goal. And, you know, being on the bus rides after the games and being at team picture days, those are
those are the moments, you know, that you'll always miss.
It's all hunky-dory, happy-go-lucky Tom Brady. Who do you love? Who do you hate? You tell me, 503-417-7575. Americans love Aaron Rodgers. Do you? They love Steph Curry. Do you? They used to love Derek Jeter before he retired, Kobe Bryant before he retired. They also hated Kobe, also hated Jeter. Love Tiger Woods or hate Tiger Woods? Tell me where you stand on major professional athletes, and if it's a college athlete or a high school athlete that you love or hate, you tell me at 503-417-7575. I'm going to go through some of mine that I love and also hate. A guy that I have tremendous respect for, Ashton Eaton. Love Ashton Eaton. Love to see Ashton Eaton be successful. I like to root for good people. I like that Ashton Eaton is a good story. I like that he's from the state of Oregon. I had him once upon a time come down here to the PacWest Center in Portland where we broadcast the BFT radio show. And we have what is a Skype Live Performance Lounge that is in the bottom floor of the building. And it's where all the musical acts like to come and hang out, and they do those acoustic variations of their songs. Ed Sheeran was in there. Taylor Swift was in there. Different musicians come in at different times of the year. And some of them you never heard of, and they're really good. Some of them that everybody's heard of, and there's a line around the block to get in the place. Well, once upon a time, the BFT Foundation, the Bald-Faced Truth Foundation, which helps kids in art, music, education, and athletics, it's a 501c3, we held an event after the London Olympics in 2012, and we called it a Chat with Champions. And we brought in Ashton Eaton, and we brought in Mack Wilkins, who had participated in a couple Olympic Games in the discus throw, and Alberto Salazar, who'd run a marathon and coached Galen Rupp in the Olympics, and Rachel Jerkovic, who had thrown the javelin in the London Olympics. We brought them all to the Skype Live Performance Lounge, and we had a panel discussion with like 100 people in the room. And I'll never forget, because the BFT Foundation is like near and dear to my heart. Like, it was born from the idea that in 2008, 2009, the schools in the state of Oregon got hammered. The state legislature took away funding for a lot of co-curricular activities. The budget got cut back. And the first things to go were art, music, education, athletics. Families were being asked to come up with more disposable income. Hey, you're going to have fees when you play sports. You're going to have bigger fees for art and drama. And guess what? No field trips. Nobody's going on a field trip anymore. All that stuff went away. And so the Bald-Faced Truth Foundation was kind of born from that. And my kid, who was then in, I think, first grade or kindergarten, I can't remember, she ended up, they had this lesson where they were going to hatch eggs in an incubator. So it was an annual thing in the spring. They would have eggs. Each of the classes in the first grade or the kindergarten, I think it was kindergarten, would have an incubator, and they would hatch eggs. And so I went to the school, and I was dropping her off, and she was very excited about hatching these eggs. And I said to the teacher, she's just jacked about hatching chickens here. And the teacher said, you know what, we're not going to be able to do it this year because the incubator's broken. And I was like, oh, damn. I was like, you know what? I've been looking for a way to help out. I've been looking for a check to write. I want to help this school. I want to buy the incubator. Can I do that? And she said, well, if you buy an incubator for our class, you've got to buy an incubator for the other first grade or kindergarten class. I can't remember what she was. And so I said, that's no problem. Let me go out to the car. I'll come in. I'll write a check. You tell me how much. So I went out to the car and got my checkbook, and I was feeling pretty good about myself, doing something good. Bunch of kids are going to get to see chickens hatched. And I got back into the classroom. There was a problem. And the teacher said, hey, by the way, we're trying to figure out where you write the check to. You can't write it to me directly. She wasn't comfortable with that. You can't write it to the school because then it goes into the general fund. You can't write it to the district because it's not earmarked for the incubators. So hold on. So it was a big problem. Like, where do we write this check to? And it was a chunk of change. I think it was $600 or $800. It was something like that for two incubators. But I was feeling good about it, and it took us a while to iron it out. And ultimately what I determined was that there was so much bureaucracy. There was so much red tape. That how do we help the schools? How do we help the kids in the schools? How do we get the money to where it needs to go without all this red tape getting in the way? And ultimately, what we decided, my wife and I, is we decided that, hey, look, we get asked to MC all these events. We get asked to MC silent auctions. She gets asked more than me to stand up in front of groups and be the MC or be the keynote speaker. And she has an amazing story as an immigrant to the United States and somebody who's ended up as a two-time Emmy Award-winning news anchor and investigative reporter. And she's just a great story of somebody immigrating to this country and making the best of it. And so she gets asked all the time, but I always look around at these auctions and these events, and they're selling hot air balloon rides, and they're selling, you know, winery tours, and they're selling, and anybody's been to one of these things, you know what I'm talking about. I once bid on a bow and arrow at one of those events that she was emceeing, and ultimately, we got to the point where I was like, why aren't we just raising the money ourselves? Why aren't we just giving it away? So Chat with Champions was born as an early fundraiser in the BFT Foundation's arc of existence. And these great athletes all volunteered their time to come and talk to the public. We charged money to get in. But ultimately, the way we were going to make money on this discussion that Ashton Eaton was sitting on the panel for was we were going to do a paddle raise. Because we'd seen it and we participated in these paddle raises at events. And if you've ever been to a fundraiser, you know what I'm talking about. There just comes a point in the night after the rice pilaf is served, after the pork chop is consumed, after the keynote speaker, where there's a heartwarming message that is given. And then, hey, will you raise your paddle and, you know, donate $100 to this cause? And that's where the hay is made, so to speak, in fundraising. And so we had mapped this out, and we even had a video that was done by a couple of fantastic photographers, Chelsea and Jason, who are a husband-wife couple, and they're in local photography and TV news. And they had done this great heartwarming video where they'd gone out and shot video of actual recipients of grants in the BFT Foundation. One young boy had an eating disorder and wanted to play football, and his dad had lost his job, and the foundation stepped up and paid for his participation fees in football. And another group was the Oregon City Girls Lacrosse Team, and they had had a robbery where somebody stole all their fundraising materials. Talk about going to hell. Somebody stole the fundraising materials for a girls lacrosse team. And so the foundation just wrote a check and replaced what they would have made on the fundraiser to fund their season. And then another was a drum line in music. And there were drummers who were saying, look, I grew up in a single parent household and I couldn't afford. This was my escape. This was my little bit of normalcy when things were chaotic around me. And the foundation happy to provide that. And what I've learned over the years is that teachers were more often than not stepping up and buying these things out of their own pocket or paying participation fees for kids they knew that couldn't participate. And so they were doing all this stuff. So we had this great video, heartwarming video. We had Ashton Eaton. We had Alberto Salazar. We had Mack Wilkins. We had Rachel Yurkovich on this panel. We had this great panel discussion, which people asked questions and said, you know, what is it to be a champion? What is it to compete in the Olympics? And hey, Ashton, did you ever think about failing as you were participating in the decathlon? A great moment there in which Ashton Eaton's like looked over and was like, no, I never once thought about failing. And people all the time think about failure, right? You do it on your regular day and the course of your day, multiple times maybe. But think about that. Ashton Eaton, he never thought about failing in the Olympics, in the decathlon. But we get to the paddle race, to fast forward my story. And I wasn't sure anybody was going to raise the paddle. I was a little nervous about it. I was a little insecure about it, in fact, because I thought, what happens if we play the video and these people are just here to hear the Olympians speak and nobody raises their hand? What do we do if nobody's hand goes up? And I will never forget, because the video played and it comes time for me on the stage to solicit, like, does anybody want to make, and you always start off with high denominations. You start off saying, does anybody want to make a $1,000 donation to the Bald Faced Truth Foundation? And there's this moment after that leaves my lips in which I know I'm out over the cliff. I'm out on a limb. If nobody raises the paddle and I then have to go down to 500 and then down to 100 and then down to 50 and 25. And what if nobody raises their hand? Like, I was literally thinking this may not work. And so I asked, does anybody in the room want to make a $1,000 donation? And the first hand that went up in the room was Ashton Eaton's. He was in the front row, part of the panel, a hand that I never thought, I didn't even give him a paddle. He just raised his hand, and Alberto Salazar raised his hand. And pretty soon in the room, other hands went up. And I have to tell you, I went to go to, hey, does anybody want to do a $500 donation? And I couldn't speak. I had tears in my eyes. I had to turn away from the audience. And it in part was because I was so moved, not just by the audience, which, by the way, raised their hands to the tune of about $25,000 that night. 75 people in the room raised $25,000 for the nonprofit organization, which you can find at baldfacetruth.org. But it was more that the surprise of Ashton Ayton and Alberto Salazar raising their hands, and also the feeling that the 25 people in the room understood what we were talking about. We were talking about kids. We were talking about the community. We were talking about, hey, if you are going to invest in something, you can buy Apple stock. You can buy Chipotle. You can buy Southwest Airlines. And that's a financial investment. But if you're going to invest in somebody, that's a whole nother equation. And often we don't know how those returns come back until years later when we see kids who come up to us, and now some of the kids that we helped originally early in the foundation's years are now in college, and they're coming back and volunteering for us, and they're coming back and working our summer camp, Camp Exceptional, and they're doing all these great things. And I'm going, they get it. But it was that moment where I looked around and went, the audience gets it. They understand what we're trying to do here. This is not a complicated sell. We're just saying, do you want to help kids? And I'll tell you something. Ashton Ayton didn't ask me for this, but last night I was on Twitter, and I just saw a tweet that he sent out. And it reminded me, and I thought about the fact that Ashton Ayton not only raised his hand that day, but later that year, on like December 30th, as people are preparing for taxes and whatever, we got another check in the mail from Ashton Ayton. It came from Bend, Oregon. It was from Ashton, and it said, here, I just wanted to give you something else. I was, you know, we were doing taxes at the end of the year, and this is a wise investment for us. And here's Ashton Ayton making another investment to the Bald Faced Truth Foundation. I'll never forget it. He didn't buy anything from me that day. He just invested in kids. And I thought to myself, for an athlete on the stage that he's on as an Olympic champion, with his being pulled in a million directions, that's a guy I can believe in. That's a guy I can get behind any time. You tell me, who can you believe in and who can you get behind? LeBron James, Michael Jordan, Aaron Rodgers, Steph Curry, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, is he still on that list? How about Serena Williams? How high is she on your list of athletes? We'll talk about that on today's show. 503-417-7575 is the phone number. Coming up, we're going to visit with Austin Meek. He is the columnist at the Eugene Register Guard. And if you are somebody interested in Oregon sports, Austin Meek has an incredible grasp of what's going on in the state. We'll talk a little bit with him about the Oregon State debacle that's going on and a lot about Oregon football moving forward. Plus, later in the show, we're going to look at free agents in the NBA. Damian Lillard had a little faux pas today on Twitter in which he suggested that Paul George is somebody the Blazers should go after. Paul George is not a free agent. We'll talk about that, and we'll pare down the list of the guys the Blazers should go after. You got the bald-faced truth.
More with John Canzano.
MyPillow.com, that is the website you need to know about. If you're looking for a pillow, promo code 750SPORTS, that's the promo code you can use to get the perfect pillow with a 10-year warranty and a 60-day money-back guarantee. You get 50% off two premium pillows and two go-anywhere pillows by going to MyPillow.com. I use MyPillow.com. I bought a pillow, and I thought, I'll see what this is about. I gotta say, I use it all the time, and I love it, and I would never go back to anything else. So that's the best thing I can say about it. MyPillow.com, promo code 750SPORTS. Make sure you're following me on Twitter, at John Canzano BFT. I'm not going to beg for it, but I'll just tell you, it's a give-and-take relationship on Twitter for me. I went a couple months without responding or replying to anybody, not out of disrespect for anybody, but just to make a point that, like, just because you open a Twitter account doesn't entitle you to a one-on-one discussion with me. But if you got something to say, and you pique my interest, or we're engaging in a way that is respectful or mutually appreciated, then absolutely, I'll tweet back and forth with you. But also, it's a great place to get breaking news and a great place to get all of the latest BFT content, including podcasts, columns that I write, and everything else. Our next guest, sports columnist at the Eugene Register-Guard, Austin Meek, joining us. And Austin, how are you, man?
Good, John. How are you doing?
Good. What is the slow time of year for Austin Meek? Because I get asked that question all the time, and I don't know what to say.
I feel like the slow time of year should be now, but it doesn't feel very slow to me. So maybe the answer is never. I don't know.
You had a great piece on the debacle at Oregon State, and I thought you took a really interesting tactic in sort of pointing out the way fans rationalize horrific things in order to make themselves feel better about rooting. How did you see the Luke Heimlich situation at Oregon State?
Well, the point I was trying to make in that column is, you know, there's a certain way that we talk about sports, and I don't see that as being very compatible with the way that we should talk about something like sexual abuse. And I don't want to paint with too broad a brush, because I've heard actually some really good conversations about this. I know you've had some on your airwaves. I've heard some as well. So there are some people who have, I think, really been able to have good dialogue about this. But there's also always going to be the other side of it, where people who are passionate about sports bring that passion into a discussion that, if we're talking about it the right way, should be detached from all that. You know, however you feel about your team, whatever color glasses you wear, ideally should be able to put those down when you talk about something this serious. But it's hard to do. If you're a passionate sports fan, that creeps into the way you see the world in a lot of ways. So I think we do a disservice in some ways to people who have actually been affected by crimes like this when we try to talk about it in the same way that we talk about sports.
Yesterday on the show, we were having this discussion about it, and I didn't want to do the show about it. I'm tired of it. I'm tired of arguing about it. I feel like if you don't already get it, you're never going to get it. And so we were taking calls, and one after the other at the end of the show, it was people saying, well, he should be allowed to play baseball. What does it have to do with baseball? And a guy who happened to be listening was a district attorney in Clackamas County, John Foote, who called into the show. All of a sudden, he's like on line four, and it's the DA in Clackamas County who says, look, this is a serious crime. And he did just what you said. He shed away the sports, and he said, let's just talk about this as a crime and why it's important that this person, you know, and especially the victim of the crime, feels like she got some justice someday when she looks back at this. And I thought that was an interesting way to look at it. What do you think? What's the most troubling part of this? Once we get past the actual crime, which horrifies us all, what's the most troubling part of this for you, Austin?
Well, I'll be honest. I'm a little troubled by the way Oregon State is handling this now, because, okay, so Luke Heimlich doesn't pitch in the Super Regional, and we don't know if he's going to pitch in Omaha, but it seems like there's a pretty good chance that he won't. So I guess I'd like to know, why isn't Luke Heimlich pitching? Is it because Oregon State didn't know about this, and then they found out about it, and they are saying, well, if we had known about this all along, he never would have been here, and now that we've found out, we don't want him representing us? I guess that's one possibility, but I guess I'm cynical enough to think that the more likely possibility is that Oregon State realizes that if Luke Heimlich pitches in Omaha, they're going to take a massive PR hit. I mean, we understand that public perception tends to rule the day in college sports. And, you know, I do have empathy for Luke Heimlich, and I do consider, you know, what's fair to Luke Heimlich. That's not where I go right off the bat. I think the first thing you think about is, hey, what's best for the victim of the crime? And maybe that's what it comes down to, is it's best for the victim of the crime if Luke Heimlich is not pitching right now. I think there's an argument for that. But I think there's also an argument to be made of, what has Luke Heimlich done wrong in the last 2 weeks that he could pitch for Oregon State up until this time, and now he can't? I just, you know, part of the reason why, you know, honestly, I I made the point that I'm not sure guys with this background have a place in college sports is because of what we're seeing. When it comes out, then the machine gets rolling, right? And the PR people take over, and now everything's dictated by what can Oregon State do to manage the crisis. And again, I just think that's a I don't think that's a productive way to handle something like this.
Austin Meek, award-winning columnist, Eugene Register Guard is with us. Chip Kelly's hired by ESPN, former Oregon coach. He's going to be a studio analyst. He was never a real media warm guy. Like he did interviews and he would joust, but I never got the impression he enjoyed that stuff. How's he going to do as an analyst?
You know, I don't know. I talked to Bill Musgrave. Bill Musgrave was in town last week and coached with Chip in Philadelphia. And, yeah, Bill's another guy who's super nice guy. Not sure he'd be great on TV either. Doesn't say a whole lot. But his take on it was he thought Chip would be really good. I'm a little more skeptical of that. We'll see. Yeah, I think with all those guys, all those coaches and former players that go into broadcasting, it all comes down to how dedicated are they to the craft. You know, the people who really do well in that role, you know, like, you know, John Gruden has probably done as well as a broadcaster as he ever did as a coach, because he puts the time into it and he really tries to explain the game. So if you work at the craft, you'll be really good. I honestly don't know Chip well enough to know if that'll be something that he wants to do, if this is just kind of an in-between thing for him before he gets his next coaching job. That'd probably be my guess, is that he won't do this a long time. But if he does dedicate himself to it, I think he could do okay.
After your last visit, we had raised the question of whether Oregon was a football school or a basketball school. I won't go there again today because it caused an uproar. But Jordan Bell in this draft and Tyler Dorsey in this draft and Dylan Brooks in this NBA draft, how important is it for Oregon to get a player drafted in the first round, or is that just fun stuff fans like to talk about?
Well, I think it's most important for one of those guys now to sort of take the torch for Oregon in the NBA. You know, we're kind of getting into a time when you look and say, who's really representing Oregon in the NBA right now? You know, you got Aaron Brooks, Joe Young with the Pacers got a little bit of run, but there's nobody that, you know, you automatically think of, you know, as being an NBA star who came out of Oregon. And I could see one of those guys, maybe not necessarily, you know, being a perennial all-star or anything like that, but Jordan Bell, for instance. I think Jordan Bell has the upside to be a really productive player in the NBA for a long time. So if one of those guys gets picked in the first round, I think that'd be great for Oregon. I think it'd be even better, though, if at least one of them becomes a really productive player, maybe an NBA starter at some point, an NBA sixth man. If that could happen for one of those guys, I think it'd be really good for Oregon.
Austin Meek, Eugene Register Guard is with us. A show that's on here in Portland, 9 to noon, with Justin Myers and Devon Pouncey, raised a question of which game this football season is most important for Willie Taggart to win. Do you have one on the schedule where you go, hey, it would be really important for Willie to win that one?
Well, I mean, the obvious one is going to be the Civil War. I think this Civil War could be as intriguing as certainly any I've seen in my, this will be, I guess, the fifth one I've covered. At no point since I've been here has the Civil War at this time of year looked like such a toss-up. So, I mean, that would be the obvious one. But I think the Nebraska game at home also would be pretty close, maybe a pretty close second, just because, you know, it's Mike Riley. Oregon lost to Mike Riley last year. That didn't sit very well. It's going to be at home. It's sort of the first big game of the Willie Taggart era. So that could really – that game could really set the trajectory for what that season's going to be. By the time the Civil War gets here, we'll basically know. You know, we'll have an idea of what direction it's going to go under Willie Taggart. But when they play Nebraska, we really won't know. So that's a pretty big game in terms of how that season's going to go.
Meanwhile, we're looking over at Oregon State, and Gary Anderson's kind of playing that stoic, you know, we're going to be tougher, we're going to be better. But I don't know who's going to throw the football for them. Is that a big problem for Oregon State, or given their backfield, do you think, hey, that's not a pressing concern?
Well, can they be a 6 or 7 win team throwing the football the way they did last year? In theory, they probably could be if their defense gets better, if their running game gets a little bit better. But if they want to, certainly if they want to contend in the division, they're going to have to find a passing game. It's just hard to win in this day and age of college football if you can't throw it. Everybody can. I mean, even bad teams can throw it. So in some ways, you know, I guess I give Gary Anderson some credit for being able to do it a different way than everybody else is doing it. But you got to be able to score in the Pac-12. And so for them to be better than, you know, a 5-7, 6-6 type team, yeah, their passing game does have to take a step forward.
Did you get sucked up into the NBA Finals, or were you turned off by the playoffs? How much did you watch?
I had trouble getting into it. I was turned off by the playoffs. I was turned off by the long layoff between the conference finals and the finals. And then the games just weren't that compelling. I really wanted it to be a series. I really wanted to get into it, but there just was no point that I felt like the Cavs were a part of it. So it's hard to get into it that way. And it's disappointing to me as just a casual NBA fan, because obviously LeBron was great, one of the great final series of all time, but at no time did that make the Cavs any kind of real threat to win the series. And so that's just it's disappointing to me as a fan to feel like, you know, the Warriors got the best shot from the second best team in the NBA, and it wasn't close. It wasn't competitive.
I look at LeBron, and at some point, I don't like to root for LeBron, because he represents to me the guy, the bully on the playground, the guy who's just so good. I don't mean that in a bad way. He's just so good. How can I root for LeBron? But then you cast him against what the Warriors are doing, and I go, he's kind of the sympathetic figure in that series.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been a total reversal of roles for LeBron to become now sort of the underdog in the NBA with the team that the Warriors have put together. It's just, you know, I'm tired of it. I'm tired of LeBron's storyline. Yeah. I'm tired of the Warriors. I don't want to see these two teams in the finals again next year. I'm afraid that I will.
Yep.
But the NBA desperately now needs something fresh. I feel like this whole dynamic now with these two teams has really been played out. I don't think there's anything new that can happen with these two teams. Certainly nothing new that can be said or written about LeBron. So the best thing that could happen for the NBA next year is for some team to come out of nowhere and become a good story.
Can Adam Silver do something? Can he step in here? Is the issue bigger than just something a commissioner can fix, or you know, because I feel like in Portland, and you've covered a lot of Blazer games, unless they draft really well and maybe get lucky in the draft, or happen to find a special group of players, free agency's not really available to them. This is just not the kind of city free agents are coming to right now. So I feel like Portland's further away from really contending than maybe ever in the time I've been here.
Yeah, it's got to be a really hopeless feeling to be a fan of a team that's not the Warriors or the Cavs, because what can you do? I mean, like you said, even if you draft really well, I feel like the Blazers have drafted pretty well, but they're not close. And like you said, they're not going to get a top line free agent to come in and help. So what is the pathway for a team like the Blazers to be better than they are right now, or to contend with the Warriors? I don't know what you do. I don't know if there's a way to create more competitive balance in the league. The problem is, you know, the NBA, unlike the NFL or Major League Baseball, you got five guys on the court at one time. And if three or four of them are three or four of the best players in the league, There's nothing you can do about that. It's not like the NFL where you got 22 guys on the field. And, well, if you can't compete in this area, then you find a way to compete in this area. You build your team differently. There's no way around it in the NBA. When you put together a team like the Warriors in the NBA, nobody's going to be able to compete with that. And unless you somehow find a way to change the rules to make that harder to do, and I don't know how you do that, but as it's set up now, there's really no way for teams to compete with the Warriors.
Austin Meek, Eugene Register Guard. Read him online at the Register Guard's website. Follow him on Twitter. Austin, thank you for your time as always.
All right, thanks, man. Hey, it's good to have you on in Eugene, too. I like to be able to get in the car and turn on the radio and hear you down here in Eugene.
Love it, Austin. Thanks, man. Appreciate you. Right, there he is. Look, and he's an award-winning writer. The Associated Press Sports Editors Awards, those are the awards that people in the sports media writing industry pay attention to. And Austin Meek had a terrific year and won in multiple categories. And just a shout-out, love having him on. Smart guy who's a great writer, and you should be following him. And a lot of sports columnists get provincial. Like, I'm the sports columnist at the Oregonian. Austin Meek has my job at the Register Guard. And there are some sports columnists who won't promote the other guys because they go, hey, you know what, that's competition, whatever. I love the way the guy writes. And I think that there's room in sports column writing for multiple voices, and especially good voices. And Austin Meek has a good voice. Appreciate Austin Meek coming on the show. Love that he's listening on the Bald Face Truth Radio Network in Eugene on Fox Sports Eugene. Welcome them as the number one affiliate. They are affiliate number one. Affiliate number two is coming on board here shortly. It's moving fast. And if you are somebody who listens in Medford or Klamath Falls, Klamath Falls is going to be affiliate number two of the BFT Radio Network. We will be on there shortly. I'll tell you how to find us there in Klamath Falls. But for people who are in Southern Oregon and for people who are interested in listening to the BFT Radio Show, maybe as they travel down the I-5, or maybe if you spend time in Medford or Klamath Falls, we will be on in Klamath Falls. And we're taking the state over, is what I'm saying. The BFT Radio Network. William is in Wilsonville, where he's listening on Portland's 102.9 and 750 The Game. And he joins us now. William, what's up, man?
John, is it scary how quiet things are down at Oregon State right now? It's kind of unbelievable. I think if people have followed any of my calls since Friday, and I have people close to the situation and close to me saying, let's give the benefit of the doubt to Oregon State. Let's give the benefit of the doubt to Pat Casey. I think that was the right thing to do initially. Here we are, Wednesday of the following week. The team's leaving for Omaha. I think the charter is going to be a little empty on seats. I think people are not going to want to go with him. I'm leaning more towards, from what I've heard, that Heimlich is going to pitch. It's not going to be in the first or second game. I think you're going to see Rasmussen and Thompson, and then you're probably going to see Heimlich come in on a third game. It baffles me that if you don't know anything about the situation, that you're not saying anything. You know, if it were me and somebody was accusing me of being involved in this or knowing about it, I'd be screaming from the heavens that I had nothing to do with it, and I would put Heimlich on an island and run the other direction. What the program has done is essentially decentralize itself from Oregon State and put themselves on an island with Luke Heimlich. And I don't think that's the right thing to do. I think Pat Casey is the kind of guy who would take a bullet for many of his players. And I think right now he's taking a bullet for the one guy he shouldn't be. And my concern is that it's all in right now at Oregon State. We're going for broke. And I think the directive coming down might be, look, you guys do what you want to do. Like Ed Ray said, make your decision, we'll make
all
ours.
Right. I think. All right, William, I got to get to a break. I appreciate what you're saying. I've got some new information there, and I'll weigh in on it next.
Something is about to happen. BFT.
Now listen up, everyone.
Let's go. The Bald-Faced Truth.
John Canzano.
I gotta say, I love him most of the time. I think he's right on.
He's okay.
John's great.
He's a little unusual.
Live every afternoon, 12 to 3 p.m.
I hate that guy because he just never knows what he's talking about.
I think he does a damn good job.
That's my dude, man. Yeah, I know him, man. I let my mother listen to him.
Now, from the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, here's John Canzano with a Bald-Faced Truth.
Camp Exceptional. It is the Bald-Faced Truth Foundation's summer camp for special needs and non-special needs children. What I mean by that is somewhere between 40 and 60% of the kids who attend the camp are dealing with a challenge of some kind. Autism, physical disabilities, Down syndrome. And somewhere between 40 and 60% of the camp are what we call typical kids. And I feel like while the camp is a sports camp, it's really a relationship camp. And it sells out virtually a year in advance every year. So we take 150 kids. We bring them out. This year it will be held at LaSalle High School in Milwaukee, July 17th through the 21st. We take the kids out to LaSalle High School, and the adapted PE specialists that run the camp, my brother and his friend and colleague Todd Jacobs, who come up from California, they have all this equipment that's available to them, and they have put together a curriculum that is fantastic. Again, this year, it'll include visits from the Portland Winterhawks and the Hillsboro Hops and the Portland Timbers, and they will learn sports. And I'm told they're doing track and field this year. So LaSalle High School in Milwaukee, Gliss's kids are going, my kids go to the camp. We happen to have about 8 to 10 spots available in the camp. And it's rare that we have this, but we had some families who said, look, we committed to the camp. Gosh, we have a vacation or we have a family reunion. We can't make it this year. Can you give us a credit toward next year's camp? And I said, yeah, we'll look at the wait list. And then I went to the wait list, and a lot of families that had been on the wait list had already made plans, and they were bummed out. So I've got about 8 to 10 spots available in the camp. And I feel like the typical kids get as much, if not more, out of this camp. And if you are somebody who's looking to give your child a dose of empathy, understanding, a good time, the camp is sponsored by Adidas. Our presenting sponsor is Oregon Blinds, OregonBlinds.net, to support them. Derek Eberhardt and his team do a great job. And we use the Celebrity Golf Tournament to mostly pay for the camp. But the camp has a tuition of $159. And right now I have 8 to 10 spots available. If you're interested in one of those spots, you can call 503-417-7575. We'll take your information down if you're interested in one of these spots. And we will lock up the first 8 to 10 people who want their kids to go. The ages are age 5 to 15. If your child has autism or Down syndrome or a physical challenge, we're here for you. If you have a typical kid, like the 14-year-old in my household who attends the camp every year and ends up in tears every year on the last day of the camp saying, it's not over, I don't want it to end. It's a great opportunity to make friendships and build relationships and learn some sports and have a good time. July 17th through the 21st. You can get information on the camp by going to baldfacetruth.org or just call us and we will lock down your spot at 503-417-7575. And right now I can hear our listeners going, let me call my wife real quick, see if we can free up those dates. Because I have all my friends are going to the camp and all of their children attend the camp. And every year, I went to a thing the other night. I went to an eighth grade graduation. And it was amazing to me at the eighth grade graduation how many of the kids were honored for community service, and they gave away service awards, and they did a lot of that stuff. And by the way, if you called in, just continue to hold. Phone lines are blowing up. Just continue to hold. We will get your information, and we will get you locked in for the camp right away. But it was amazing to me how many of the kids listed Camp Exceptional as the summer camp that they attended. And I know parents right now are looking for things to do for their kids this summer. I believe we will probably fill the camp in the next 5 minutes. But if you are somebody who's interested in that, bless you. Get your kids involved in it. If you're somebody, too, who just wants to support it, please reach out to us as well. We're always looking for sponsors. Oregon Blinds is always the presenting sponsor of this camp. Adidas is a sponsor of this camp. Keen Shoes, a great Portland-based company, a sponsor of this camp. The Shoe Mill Shoe Stores sponsor the camp. Anderson Pool Works sponsors the camp. First Call Heating and Cooling sponsors the camp. I mean, I just go down the list every year, and it's all these quality blue chip companies that buy into the community. And by the way, all those businesses come out to the camp, and they're like, they stand there like Phil Knight, you know, arms folded, proud of like, we're building this thing. And they are. There are Phil Knights, all those companies. And I mean that, like everybody says, Uncle Phil, Uncle Schumel, Uncle Adidas, Uncle Derek Eberhardt at Oregon Blinds, OregonBlinds.net, again, if you want to. If you want to check out any of, if you're looking for window coverings. So support those companies because they support not only the community, but this camp in particular. All right, I'm going to play some Punch It audio.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald-Faced Truth Headquarters.
Hey, we're all about truth, justice, and the American way here, okay? Which is why we've spanned the globe and pulled the top audio cuts of the day.
You're going to hear little snippets of sound.
Hey, it's time for Punch It Audio.
Tyson Alger of the Oregonian and OregonLive.com was on with Justin and Devon in Portland here on 102.9 The Game. He says Willie Taggart's staff has brought a lot of energy into the program. Here's Alger talking about that energy. Punch it.
I'm not saying the past staff wasn't enthusiastic about this program, but, you know, Taggart and his new staff have been kind of off the charts, and I think that's relatable to the fans. I think it's relatable to the players. I think it's a much younger staff. I think the players definitely kind of relate to them better in that sort of sense.
Hey, I will say what he's not saying. I went back today. I was listening to a Mark Helfrich interview from a year ago. And I was surprised at the lack of energy. And it's the one thing that Willie Taggart's staff has done that you can definitively say is a victory right now for Oregon. Enthusiasm, energy, buzz, all that's going on at Oregon. And if you're a Ducks fan, that's what gets you through the summer. That's why people are talking about Oregon football and excited about Oregon football. It's infectious. And thank you, Willie Taggart, for bringing that back to Oregon. Gina Mizell was on the show yesterday. I asked her if the Beavers could win the Pac-12 in football. She said this. Punch it.
If Oregon State wins the North, that would make them one of the biggest national stories in college football, I think. And Gary Henderson would be praised as a National Coach of the Year contender. So, but like I said, Tristan Dacute has never lacked for confidence, so I'm not surprised that he would come on your show and call his shot.
Former Beaver Tristan Dacute, cornerback with the Texans in the NFL now, says Beavers are winning it all, even though he's not there. Gina Mizell, yesterday we went through the schedule. She put the Beavers at 7-5 with a Civil War victory. You agree with it? Tweet at me, at John Canzano BFT. Yesterday's show was finished at the end with some talk about Luke Heimlich, Oregon State's controversial left-handed sex offender. You like that? Will he pitch? Will he not pitch? Clackamas District Attorney John Foote called into the show and he weighed in on the gravity of the Oregon State baseball situation. Punch it.
He was 15, I guess, at the time it started. But he would go to prison in Oregon. He would go to the correct juvenile correctional facility. It's a Measure 11 crime. It carries a mandatory minimum sentence. If he had been sentenced when he was 15 in Oregon, he would finishing his sentence. That's how significant it is. This is not some little thing. It's easy to diminish this, but this is our laws and our voters view this as a very serious crime. And I don't mean this as any malice towards this young person. I don't. That's not what this is about. But I don't know what the laws are in Washington State. I don't know how he avoided consequences like that in Washington State. But I'm just reinforcing what you're saying, which is society views these crimes, especially over an extended period with such a vulnerable person, young person, as very serious. So I hope people will consider that first before they talk about baseball.
I agree with John Foote. Couldn't have said it better myself. And I love moments like that on this radio show because, you know, we're debating it. You're kicking it around. I'm kicking it around. We're talking about it. We're passionate about it. And it turns out that the Clackamas County District Attorney is listening to the show. And that's a guy who's qualified to come in and say, hey, here's the gravity of the crime. Odell Beckham Jr. said that he is not holding out over a contract dispute. Punch it.
I've seen the whole, what's it called, a holdout and all that stuff, and I've never really seen it work, so that was never in my mind to, I'm not going to go to OTAs to get a new contract. I don't think that really proves a point, in my opinion. So I was really just out there, you know, really taking that time for myself to reflect on life and value, you know, what's really, really important. And like I said, to grow and mature.
He also showed up to the minicamp workout with cleats that had the letters, the call letters of networks that have ticked him off. Odell Beckham Jr. is one of these guys. Like, he's a sensational player. He's a great player. If you have him on your fantasy league, good for you. But he's also one of these guys that does that thing. That thing where he complains about the media coverage that he gets and the microscope that he lives in, the fishbowl that he exists in. He complains about it while simultaneously benefiting from it. It's like, if you don't like the fishbowl, don't climb into it. It's the same thing for me. I bitch and moan about people coming into this studio on commercial breaks. I got a million things to do. The news director at KGW wants me to call him. I'm working on Camp Exceptional stuff. I've got salespeople, marketing people coming in here. And I bellyache about it, but at the bottom line is, I signed on for this. And Odell Beckham Jr., on a larger scale, you signed on for what you're enduring. Lonzo Ball and other draft prospects took part in a new Foot Locker commercial talking about everything Dad has done for them. This is sure to get your attention. Lonzo Ball in a commercial talking about his dad. Punch it.
Dads are special. So many memories.
All those games of one-on-one in the driveway where he let me win. Just never missing a game.
Of course, there's that big day when your dad berates your high school coach in front of an entire crowd for not getting you enough touches.
Waking up early to drive to all those faraway tournaments.
Or that special moment when your dad sits you down and tells you where you're going to college. Copyrights your name to make it a part of a family lifestyle brand. Went on First Take and shouted back and forth with Stephen A. Smith about how you're already better than the reigning league MVP.
I love that. Humanizes Lonzo Ball. It's what we needed. We need less of LeVar, more Lonzo, please. Dodgers' Cody Bellinger has his team atop of the NL West. I hate the Dodgers. Punch it.
And the pitch. Drilled to right field and deep, and it looks like Bellinger has left the yard again. A three-run shot this time. It is 7-2. Oh, my.
I just could never find it in me to root for the Dodgers. I tried when I was about 10 or 11. There's a photograph of me wearing a Dodgers hat. Like, it was one summer. I had a friend who was a Rams and a Dodgers fan. My friend Vladimir was a smart guy. He ended up as an attorney. He lives in the Michigan area, and I think he listens to the show because every once in a while I get a tweet from him. But Vladimir was a Rams fan. He loved him some Pat Hayden. He loved Vince Ferragamo. And he loved the Dodgers. And I tried it one summer. I was like, I'll get a Dodgers hat, whatever. Nah, didn't take. And I found out recently on Twitter, as I was watching him, he was following the Giants. He went to Cal. That's where he went to college. Smart guy. But I found out more recently that Vladimir ended up a Giants and 49ers fan. Wonder who did that to him. I love all the discussion we've been having on the show when it comes to college football. But Bill Belichick in the NFL is talking about the victory lap that you take after winning a Super Bowl. Is he ready for that to end? Punch it.
It was a great night, but really, we need to move on to 2017. You know, we've had enough parades, enough celebrations, and enough everything. This 17 team hasn't done anything yet.
They haven't done a damn thing. Moment was nice, but the moment's gone. I love that, and it gives us an idea. Like, it would be so hard, and I think that's the thing that is most impressive about the Patriots. It would be so hard to focus after having the amount of success that they have had. So hard to come back with an edge, a chip on your shoulder. And in that respect, they kind of needed Deflategate. Like, it served them well, Deflategate did, in sharpening them, getting them focused and locked in. It was the league against them. I just think, like, Roger Goodell must have been at halftime of that Atlanta-New England Super Bowl, feeling like he was off the hook. Wasn't going to have to give the trophy to them. 28-3 was not far behind and feeling really good. And then all of a sudden he's got to present the trophy to the team that, you know, there wasn't a worse situation for him. It was incredible to see that comeback. And also kind of funny what the Patriots did with their rings. See what they did with their rings? The 28-3 deficit. They had 283 diamonds on the ring. Just a little Robert Kraft, Tom Brady, Bill Belichick. That's like Bill Belichick going, so funny. Now back to work. By the way, I know I've told the story before about Bill Belichick finding me on eBay. But I don't know if Curtis Rogers has heard the story of Belichick. Have you heard the story of Belichick and I?
I don't believe so, no.
Okay, so did you collect baseball or football cards when you were a kid?
Absolutely.
You have them somewhere, like
yes.
In a box somewhere?
Yeah, in my childhood bedroom still.
What was your, like, prized card? Do you have, like, a set or a sport that you really collected?
Baseball was my number one sport that I collected.
Is there, like, if the house was on fire, you could only grab one card. Would there be a card that you could come to mind or a set?
I think there's two cards that come to mind. I've got a Derek Jeter rookie card, tops. And then I've also got a Mike Trout rookie card.
Awesome. So you're younger than me, so that makes sense.
Yeah.
Most of mine were late 70s, early 80s cards. But I, over time, had collected some football cards, old football cards from like the 1950s that just somehow they're just like commons. It was nothing special. But even the common cards from like the 1950s tops football sets are like $5, $8, $10, $12 bucks a piece. So I listed this small group of about 8 or 10 cards on eBay. I was just getting rid of them. And Bill Belichick was a defensive coordinator with the New York Jets at the time, bought the cards on eBay. And in the set was a Ted Marchabrota rookie card, okay? It was worth like 20 bucks or whatever. The whole lot of cards sold for like 28 bucks or something low, ridiculous. And I just got in this email exchange with Belichick in which I was asking him why he's collecting the cards, and he was saying these are all guys that I've coached with over the years. He was collecting cards of guys he coached with. He had a collection. So Bill Belichick collects football cards. We know that now. So anyway, he sent me the check. And I got this check in an envelope from Bill Belichick with his home address on it in Muttontown, New York. And I got a personal check in there from Bill Belichick for like 28 bucks. And I did a stupid thing. I cashed the check. I should have just kept the check, right? Like I took it and cashed it and gave it to the bank teller. But I kept the envelope. And I've got it on the wall in my little bar at home from Bill Belichick. But the minute he found out I was a media member, that was the last.
Oh yeah,
that's the last thing I told him.
Stonewalled you.
It was like, hey, what are you doing? I'm in training camp. Why are you collecting these cards? This is what I do. Do you have any others? He was asking me for certain cards that he wanted, and all this stuff. And then I'm like, oh, by the way, I'm a sports columnist at a newspaper. Bill. Hello, Bill. He left. Bill Belichick left the conversation. I retell that story now and then, and. Of course, the Boston media loves it because they can't get any personality out of him. But he collects football cards. It's kind of cool.
Just a peek into the life of Bill Belichick right there.
Could you imagine having to make a trade? Like, what if Belichick wanted your A-Rod, your Derek Jeter rookie card? Like, what would it take to get the Derek Jeter rookie card off you?
I mean, he's got a good collection of cards on him.
Yeah,
probably got a nice bank account as well.
Would you take a autographed football?
Sure, yeah. Tom Brady autographed football? Sure. Yeah,
you don't want a Belichick autograph. You want a Brady autograph.
No, yeah.
All right, you tell me. Give me the prized collector's item in your collection. 503-417-7575.
The Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano.
Can we stop the LeBron James Michael Jordan thing? Can we just stop with it? And part of me, like, I love lists. I love when we do, like, who are the best 100 athletes of all time? Who are the best trailblazers of all time? And people will call in and they'll argue. Well, they'll say, Bill Walton won a championship. He has to be the best. And Clyde Drexler was the best. No, Damian Lillard or Brandon Roy, those guys were the best. You tell me, are those kinds of discussions helpful? I know it's like barstool discussion. It's great when we're like taking a trip and we're on the airplane. We're like, who do you think is the best? Or who's on the Mount Rushmore, the Trailblazers version of Mount Rushmore? And people always shock me with the narrow scope that they take on those things. But it's always interesting to me, too, because it's telling. It's revealing. This Jordan LeBron thing is not telling or revealing to me. If you like LeBron as the greatest player of all time, you are under the age of 35, and if you like Michael Jordan as the greatest player of all time, you are over the age of 35. It's that simple. Gliss, how old are you? The producer of this show. I think he's right on the Mendoza line, if I'm reading this right. How old are you?
I am 33 years old.
LeBron or Jordan?
Jordan all day, but I will say, I think
I might go lower then. 33.
Yeah, I would say, but you know, I saw all of Jordan's best years, but I would say LeBron is not that far behind him. But to me, Jordan's always going to be the best player.
Why do you think we love these discussions? What's this about?
I don't know. I think it's just one of those things we do in sports where it helps us kind of put things in context. But I mean, does it really matter? That's the only thing that I kind of think about is, every generation has great players. I think Jordan, a lot of people that are my age or older are always going to look at him as probably the best player just because he always won once he got to the NBA Finals.
Jordan, there's a great book that George Plimpton wrote. It's called The X Factor, and I brought it up a few times. And I was in the bookstore the other day, and I almost bought it to give to several people on the staff because I talk about this book all the time. Plimpton wrote this book called The X Factor where he went out and he talked with athletes and met with champions and met with CEOs. He went and hung out with Lee Iacocca, who was the CEO of Chrysler, and he hung out with Bush, the president of the United States, played horseshoes with him, in fact, and he met Michael Jordan and talked to Jordan about this stuff. And so it was all this great stuff from George Plimpton, who's fantastic as a writer. Paper Lion, you should read that as well. But Plimpton wrote this book called The X Factor. And if you're into competition, go get The X Factor and read it. It's a very easy read. But The X Factor talked about what it is that these players have or these people have that make them natural leaders, that make them natural athletes, that make them natural winners, most of all. And the common theme was, if you played these people in tic-tac-toe, they wanted to beat your ass. You played them in Monopoly, they wanted to beat you. Sorry, beat you. Basketball, beat you. And I remember an interview I did with President Obama prior to the election. He was then Senator Barack Obama. He was headed to the state of Oregon for the fourth time in his campaign. And they were coming into town, and they wanted to do only one media interview. And I know that the campaign leader was like, the head of his campaign was like, do that sports radio show guy because he's got a bobblehead doll and see if we can get a bobblehead doll in the wash. And we end up sending him a bobblehead doll, and he came on the show, and he knew that he could get on Oregon Live, that he could get on this radio show, that he could be statewide with one interview. That's why he did it. It wasn't because he liked me. But he came on the show, and I asked him about playing one-on-one against John McCain or one-on-one against Hillary. And it was really interesting because you would expect like a politician, like John McCain was American hero. This was like war hero. Somebody who I would consider like a respected older politician. Is that a polite way to put it? He wasn't like he was a senior citizen, but he was up there, John McCain. So I asked President Obama about playing McCain one-on-one in basketball. And I expect that he's going to be like very polite about it, you know, or be politically correct. And instead he just says, I'd beat him 15 zip. Like, I would just back John McCain's ass down and beat him 15-0 and run him all over the court. And that, and to me, it speaks to that same point that everybody talks about with Michael Jordan. He's got the X factor. It was evident when you played him in a series, he wasn't losing. Like, it didn't matter. It didn't matter if he had the better players on his team. It didn't matter. He's will it to happen. LeBron is a great player, a generational player. I don't feel that galvanizing X factor in LeBron James, where he's going to absolutely overcome no matter what you throw his way, whether it is a great offense, a great defense, an imbalanced roster, or for in Jordan's case, the flu. It didn't matter. He just won. True of presidents. It's probably true of Donald Trump. Like him or hate him, President Trump's got some kind of competitive nature that is X factor. And we had Rick Riley on the show, the legendary sports writer, who was talking about playing golf with Donald Trump and Trump cheating at golf. Like, how much of a cheater he is at golf. So you've got this X factor that exists in Jordan. You've got this winning X factor that exists in certain athletes where you go, that guy's got it, and not. And LeBron, to me, is a guy who is very quick to hold up the fact that he had a tremendous series individually, very quick to point out, I did everything I could do. It was a triple-double that I averaged. I'm the only player in history to do that, and I caught Magic Johnson for triple-doubles, and I caught, you know, I passed Jordan for points scored, and he starts talking about all that stuff that's individual. And I just wonder if we sat LeBron down and we let him play checkers against Michael Jordan, would you take LeBron in that game? Because I would not. I think Michael Jordan would kick his ass in checkers. I think he'd beat him in solitaire, or he'd beat him in cards, he'd beat him in war, he'd beat him in, you know, dominoes, he'd beat him in Sorry, Monopoly. We have a game at our house that we play. It's called Exploding Kittens. It's a card game. It's pretty cool. It's very creative, but there's a real competitive edge to it. Michael Jordan would dominate LeBron in Exploding Kittens. I'm just saying, I think when we talk competition, just like, who's going to get that parking space, LeBron or Jordan? Anybody have a doubt that Jordan would beat him to the spot? Or find a way? I just feel like there's a great, 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 great Hall of Fame player in LeBron James and a great, great, great Hall of Fame player in Michael Jordan. But I think when we talk about competitive nature, if we are ranking those guys, and I'm not saying LeBron's not competitive, I'm just saying Michael Jordan was like on another stratosphere when it came to, I am going to cut your heart out and I am going to show it to you. He had that next level thing. And some great players have great ability, but don't need what Jordan needed. I think Michael Jordan on a golf course was probably the same animal that he was on the basketball court. He needed it. 503-417-7575. I'm going to probably ask you to state your age if you're going to take a player in this battle. But tell me, do you agree with that assessment of Jordan and LeBron? And if you are looking at this and you're having to rank one of those two guys in this unhealthy discussion that's going on, which of those two guys do you take? Let's go to Mike, who's in Portland. Mike, how old are you, by the way?
Oh, man, I'm 35, but, you know, first of all...
You're not 35.
No. John.
Yeah, go ahead.
You know, first of all, I would put Dr. J over Michael, because I think what Dr. J have done for basketball is more or less... Before Dr. J came on the scene, they were doing the sex shots. And when Dr. J came on the scene, he took the game from the floor to the air, which is what Michael did when he was copying Dr. J. And I think Kareem is more valuable than Michael, in that without Kareem, you would have never seen the alley-oop, because he was so dominant, they had to outlaw dunking in college, and so they developed the alley-oop, which is still being played in basketball today. So from them two point of views, those guys are much more – their contribution is much more lasting than Michael. I think the one contribution that Michael did make is more off the court than on the court, and that's when he changed the shorts from being short to down to your knees, because that style went on into society. And so you see people walking around today wearing long shorts, and it really came from Michael Jordan. So that was his lasting contribution.
Also, the branding and the marketing that Jordan brought, the Jordan brand being bigger than just about anything. I disagree, though, on Dr. J. I think he's talking about, okay, if you're talking about Lifetime Achievement Award or contributions to basketball, sure, you can make an argument for Dr. J over Jordan. But let's think about Dr. J, who, you know, had won two ABA championships, and people forget about him in 1974 and 76 in the ABA. He had to do everything for his teams. But, you know, Dr. J getting a ring, he won one championship, aside from the two ABA championships. And, you know, he won it with Moses Malone in Philadelphia and the arrival of Moses Malone. Mark's in Portland. Mark, what's up?
Hey, I totally agree with that on Dr. J. I don't know where he's going with that. I just want you to, with Michael Jordan, he had to wait till all those great teams in the 1980s got old. Detroit, the Bad Boys, the Celtics, the Lakers. He never beat a team in the 90s with a great center. He beat Vlade Divac with the Lakers, Utah, the Blazers. I mean, none of those teams were Hall of Fame-laced teams. I would take Magic any day of the year. I know I get disputes on that at 21 over Michael, because he understood the game from the moment he stepped on the floor. The Game 6 closeout, the finals, his rookie year at age 20, where he switched from point guard to center with Jabbar out against Philly and dominated the game from the low post. He understood when he was double-teamed. It wasn't until Michael Jordan trusted his teammates and created all those great perimeter shooters like Olajuwon did in the 90s. But the 90s were just, in my opinion, a weak decade. It's impossible to tell which one of these guys are the best. But I'd take Bill Russell first and Magic second if it was me. And I've seen them all play. Bill Russell, in a closeout Game 7 final game, 30 points and 40 rebounds in a time that they didn't keep track of blocked shots. He probably had 15 blocked shots in that game. So a lot of these
That's crazy.
Yeah, it was just the guy was eight straight titles, John. You know, 11 titles in 13 years. So if we're going to base it on winning the finals, he won eight straight championships, in a row. And he was playing against centers like Will Chamberlain. So there were some studs that he was going up against.
When I look at the list of, like, all-time championships, the thing that surprises me, he brought up Magic Johnson, who was a guy at his size that could play all five positions. I mean, he could play all five positions and play at an all-star level. But the fact that Magic Johnson only won five NBA championships, I say only five, it jumps out at me that he won five. Dennis Rodman won five championships. Think about that. Rodman won two with Detroit and three with Chicago. Kobe won five. Derek Fisher won five. Duncan won five. Ron Harper won five championships. I always look back, and maybe it was the fact that Kareem won six, by the way, but it was the fact that the Celtics and Lakers were, you know, challenging each other at a level that didn't allow somebody to go win 11 like Boston did with Bill Russell. Or 10 with Sam Jones, and 10 and 12 seasons for Sam Jones. Chris is in Silverton. The phone number is 503-417-7575. Chris, what's up, man?
Hey, John. Thanks for taking my call. Well, I'm 38, but I'm not sure the age part plays as big of a role as you probably think. I mean, it makes sense with the younger generation seeing LeBron play, but I have a 12-year-old at home that his favorite player is Michael Jordan. Never seen him play. Maybe seen some highlights, and I don't know if maybe, you know, besides Jordan setting kind of that highest standard, he had an ability to connect with the general population through commercials and just his competitiveness. You know, they call Kobe the assassin, but he's the top, the pinnacle of all competition. And just the combination of maybe his being somewhat humble, and just being a winner, the younger generation, I think, still keeps that top of mind also.
Yeah. I also think, like, do you wear long shorts at 38? Are you a long shorts guy?
Not really. Down to the knees, maybe at the most.
I thought that Michigan and the Fab Five brought the long shorts out. Am I wrong about that? Was Jordan the innovator on long shorts? I once did a story. There was this guy here in Portland, in the Portland area, who was suing Michael Jordan, and he was suing Nike for stealing his likeness. Basically, you get all kinds of litigious people that will sue for different things. It happens. There's a lady that goes through a drive-thru and somebody spills coffee on her and it's a crazy lawsuit, right? But there was a resident of Portland named Alan Heckard, who I went to see in North Portland years ago, because he was suing Michael Jordan. He sued Michael Jordan. He sued Phil Knight. He sued Nike. He sued them for $832 million. He cited emotional suffering. Now, Alan Heckard shaved his head. He had a single earring like Michael did. He paid $206 to file a lawsuit because he said he can't live a normal life and because of all the attention. He said in the lawsuit that he wanted to be recognized as himself. And I went to see Alan Heckard in North Portland because I thought, here's a guy suing Michael Jordan. Let's see if he looks like Michael Jordan. And I didn't think he looked that much like Michael Jordan. He was black. He had an earring. He had a shaved head. And, like, at least to me, he didn't look like Michael Jordan. He just looked like, you know, Alan Heckard. So he ended up dropping the lawsuit. But I thought to myself at the time, like, it's not such a bad thing to look like Michael Jordan and get mistaken for Michael Jordan. Like, would that be the worst thing? Like, if you get mistaken for Meatloaf, yeah. You get mistaken for, you know, John Candy? We can sit around bitching about that. If you're a woman and you're like, man, I'm so tired of people coming up to me telling me I look like Giselle. You know, that's not a bad look, okay? Probably got a good table at a restaurant now and then, if that's true. And it couldn't be the worst thing, like, to be a Michael Jordan lookalike. Trey's in Portland. What's up? How are you?
Hey, I'm good. How are you doing?
Good.
Good. So Michael went 6-for-6 in the finals, which is, you know, absolutely amazing.
Yes.
But he played 14 seasons, so that's 8 seasons he didn't even make it to the finals. So your argument that he just willed his teams to win every series is a little bit false.
Well, I'm talking about NBA finals. I just can't see Jordan in an NBA finals against anybody losing the finals. I mean, when that guy's sniffing around something, he's on it.
Yeah, and then also one other thing, it's LeBron's 14th season, and he averaged a triple-double in the finals, and then I think in Jordan's 14th season, he took the Wizards to about 37 or 38 wins. So
How old are you, Trey?
I am 25.
Yeah, so. See? Exactly. What's your favorite fast food restaurant?
Fast food restaurant? I don't know, Taco Bell.
All right, you're okay. I thought you were going to say something millennial to piss me off. All right. Trey, thank you for that. Trey keeping me honest. But what I was saying about his competitive desire is you get Jordan in a game of horseshoes. He's going to want to kill you. Okay. But, yes, 6-for-6 in the finals. I mean, it was almost like because he won it 3 in a row, then he took the thing off for baseball and did that, and then came back and won 3 more. It was almost like he got bored. It's almost like he just decided, hey, you know what? I want to go try something else. I want to go do something else. Damian Lillard caused a little bit of a stir today with a tweet he sent out. We're going to talk about that coming up. Also, make sure you're following me on Twitter, at John Canzano BFT, where we can mix it up. And also, make sure that you are subscribed to the Bald Faced Truth Radio Show on SoundCloud and iTunes, where you can get podcasts of the show. If you miss anything or you want to share with friends, we do it for you free. Adriana does it, I should say. And by the way, I put a photograph of the support staff, the production staff, Curtis Rogers, the board operator, update anchor here in Portland, and Gliss and Adriana. I put a photo of them out there for you. that people have been tweeting about, just so you can put faces to names. That's all I'm saying. You're listening to The Bald-Faced Truth. Leave it here. More on Damian Lillard's tweet next.
I want you all to listen up. This is important stuff, all right?
Okay. Here we go.
The Bald-Faced Truth.
Call 503-417-7575 or 877-733-0750 or text to 64636.
Here we go in 3, 2.
Now, from the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, here's John Canzano with a Bald-Faced Truth.
I got a giveaway this segment. I've got a pair of Saturday passes for a weekend in August. I got a giveaway. I'll tell you what that giveaway is coming up. I love that you call into the show. I love that we have a dialogue. We're not always going to agree, but a lot to talk about in this June the 14th, 2017 edition of the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Show. I want to point out that if you are looking for a mattress, get yourself to Mattress Firm. Mattress Firm has got the 4th of July sale that is on early right now. You can take advantage of those early savings. You can save up to $500 in select models at Mattress Firm. And you can take advantage of 0% APR. That's 0% financing for 6 years. That's 72 months of interest-free sleeping. You can sleep easy at Mattress Firm, where you can get a great mattress at a great price. So go see them or go to mattressfirm.com to see the location nearest you and start saving. Take advantage of that early 4th of July savings. A lot of companies will wait till, like, it's the 4th of July sale. It's on July 2nd. Nope, Mattress Firm is saying, hey, take advantage. Look forward to it and get yourself a great night of sleep. Mattress Firm. All right, my giveaway. And I always say giveaway, and then what happens, Gliss, when I say there's a giveaway? People start calling in before I even say what we're giving away.
That's right. I mean, wouldn't you do the same thing? You want to win something, right?
Prize pigs, we call them in this industry. No head starts. Are people calling in right now trying to win?
Well, the phones were ringing. They keep getting disconnected, so I don't know.
All right. I'll put them on hold. But here's the deal. You can call right now to win a pair of Saturday passes to Music Fest Northwest presents Project Paps. Am I saying that right? Paps?
That is correct. It's a two-day festival at the end of August.
Waterfront Park, Saturday, August 26th, Sunday, August 27th. You can get tickets for this at 1029thegame.com. But call right now for your chance to win a pair of Saturday passes to see this great music fest on the Waterfront Park. Are we giving them away, or what are we doing?
I have one pair of tickets to give away for the Saturday, which is headlined by Iggy Pop.
Awesome.
And the tickets you can buy, it's actually a two-day. I believe the second day, Nas and Beck are the headliners.
All right, there you go. You can do that. That's great music. And, of course, brought to you by our great radio station cluster here, Alpha Media, that does a great job canvassing the country with music and spoken word. And look, I get a lot of feedback about my show. I get a lot of feedback about other shows that are on the station. I get a lot of feedback about advertisers on the station and people up in arms over this advertiser, that advertiser. And I have a lot that I control on the show. And I think that if you are somebody who cares about the First Amendment and you care about the ability or the right for people to speak their mind, that the spoken word radio stations should be something you support, something you go, hey, that's all right. I don't agree with everything that I hear on a daily basis. I don't agree with everything that's said on the show. Like, callers will call into the show, and I disagree with them, but I support their right to be on the show because I have a platform here on this radio show, and I was afforded it, and I take it very responsibly, and I take it with a lot of appreciation that I have the platform to speak my mind on a daily basis. And so I invite you in on a daily basis to call into the show, tweet at me, whatever. I can't guarantee you a response. I can't guarantee that you'll get on the show. We had a guy yesterday that held for nearly 2 hours before he got on the show. And that happens on occasion because we get a tremendous volume of calls. We get we have great guests on the show, so we're not always taking calls. But if you are somebody who is interested in those tickets for Music Fest Northwest, it's 503-417-7575. And there you go. That's the phone number. You can call in and get the tickets. And if you're somebody who listens to this radio station and you hear the different opinions, and this is why radio programmers don't have a show that goes 6 a.m. to midnight. You don't put just one show on 6 a.m. to midnight any different than you'd have one television show on. Like I love Brockmire on the Independent Film Channel. I like House of Cards. And I'll even binge watch those series. But I don't want 6 a.m. to midnight Brockmire. I don't want Homeland Monday through Friday, 6 a.m. to midnight. It would make me nauseous to see the same show and the same message over and over and over again. But I'm telling you, there's a reason why you get different opinions, different personalities, different radio shows. It's why the show before this one and the show after it is different than this one. We're not always going to agree. You might find some of what I say offensive. You might find some of what the next guy says offensive. The person before me, you may say, well, they had a better take or a worse take. All I can give you is my opinion and how I feel. That's it. That's all I'm responsible for. I happen to like the people I work with. But I also know that these are coworkers. So ask yourself this question. Because I got people banging on me saying, did you hear what Justin and Devon said this morning? And did you hear what Dino Costa said yesterday? And did you hear what was said on your station over the weekend? First of all, I don't own the station. I am responsible for 3 hours of real estate on this radio station. And if you're listening on the affiliate in Fox Sports Eugene, I'm not responsible for the show that comes before me or the show that comes after me. This is my ecosystem, this 3 hours. And within this ecosystem, I'm going to hopefully entertain you. I'm going to hopefully make you think. Maybe you'll agree with me. Maybe you'll hear a guest. Maybe in the course of talking about, you know, hey, we were just talking the other day about, you know, Dr. J or Bill Russell, or, you know, we were just talking about how Magic Johnson, was he the greatest of all time? And
get him on the show.
Yes, we get big guests on the show. I was just thinking about this the other day. I was going through, because we do best of shows when I'm out now. That's what you're going to hear when I go on vacation. And that's not a cue for you to tune out, because I'm going back through the best of shows. It's Mean Joe Green. It's Tom Glavine. It's Steve Garvey. It's Mike Leach. It's Dick Vermeil. It's President Obama. It's Rick Riley. It's Jeff Garcia, the former NFL quarterback. It's Chip Kelly. It's Bill Shonley. It's Pauly Shore. It's Brian Grant. It's good stuff. And I'm thinking to myself, gosh, we have great guests. It's awesome, these guests that we're getting. But I also feel like part of this radio show is the real estate that I really like inside the show. Sometimes it's, man, we disagree. Or, man, this opens a can of worms. It gives us an opportunity to talk about how different we are and how different we feel. And yes, if you are somebody who is looking to only hear things that you agree with, and you only want to hear things that make you feel good all over and make you happy and never make you think or never challenge you to think outside the box, I've had my mind changed on this show before. And maybe you've had your mind changed. If you're looking to only get groupthink going on, I only want to hear people who agree with me. I only want to hear thoughts that align with mine. My ideology is first rate, and so I don't want to hear any other ideology. There'll be no talking about anything that I disagree with. Then this show is not for you. And what a boring place that is to exist. Like, I think there's a way to disagree and have it be okay. And I say all the time, like, people will write me or call me, and they'll be like, I disagree with you. And I'm like, well, thank goodness it's not war. It's not the economy. This is not Afghanistan. We're not out there disagreeing on whether or not that's a landmine in the middle of the street while we're trying to clear it. We're not disagreeing on how to fix the United States economy or create more jobs. If we were disagreeing on that stuff, I would be losing sleep over it. But you know what we disagree on? We disagree on things like whether or not LeBron or Michael Jordan are the greatest of all time. We disagree on things like who's the better football team this year, Oregon or Oregon State. We disagree on whether or not Oregon State should have a registered sex offender pitching for it. It's about as serious as it gets for us. And those are discussions that we have that ultimately don't factor in whether or not Oregon State pitches the kid. Oregon State's going to do what Oregon State wants to do. And in fact, I feel like there's a major rift between the baseball program and the university when it comes to Luke Heimlich. And I feel like a lot of this discussion, you know, Oregon State knew that Luke Heimlich was a registered sex offender. At the very best case scenario, they knew about it, you know, a month before the story came out. And Austin Meek, our guest off the top of the show, raised a great point. So why is Oregon State not pitching Luke Heimlich right now? Because they knew a month ago. Did they just wait till it got out? Were they hopeful that the Oregonian was not going to publish this? Were they just trying to get as far as they could before it came out? What were they thinking? And why does it matter to them now that it's out more than it did before the public knew about it? And to Oregon State fans, I love you, Oregon State fans. I drive into the parking lot at Reser Stadium and I look at you and I say, you know, I grew up in California, but I grew up in an area south of San Jose. Gilroy is the name of the city. It's the garlic capital of the world. It's agricultural. A lot of my friends, they had families that worked on the farms or owned the farms. The high school I went to was 50% Hispanic because a lot of the community was migrant workers. I relate to agricultural people. Salt of the earth, farmer's tan, people who have kind of the this makes sense mentality, so let's do it. And so I've always felt like the Oregon State fan, I understood them. And yet at a time like this, I am conflicted over whether I misjudged some of you or maybe just every fan base in America has got a thin stripe of people who don't care. They don't give a damn. As long as their guy plays, they will stand by their team no matter what. So maybe if you're one of those fans who's standing by your team, you can ask yourself where the line is for you. Because I don't see it. And I was in the bank this morning, and I had a lady walk up to me, and she hugged me. And she said, thank you for your thoughts on this. They're important. I have a one-year-old child. It's important to me, and I'm so glad that we agree on it. And you know what? If she had walked up and said, I disagree with you, I would have had the same respectful discussion with her. Tell me where you stand on those issues at 503-417-7575. Jessica is in Portland. Jessica, what's up?
As a sincere Ducks fan, I don't know, I sincerely, like, feel bad for the Beaver fans because, like you said, they are loyal, very loyal fans. And to have this all come out, you know, a couple days before College World Series and week before the draft, I feel bad for the kid, of course. Well, the kid, you know, that is under the, you know, controversy. And I feel bad for the pitcher. And I don't know, I can understand why they're not, you know, having him pitch. It's, you know, more of a controversy, and they don't want to, seems like they don't want to have to deal with it. And so I think it's the right decision for them not to start him.
I agree with it, too. And Jessica, thank you for that call. I also think that I don't want to talk about the specifics of the issue, because I feel like we have gone through it. We've raked through it. We know where you stand, you know where you stand. I know where I stand, and I'm not here to try to convince you to feel otherwise. But what I'm really focused on today, and what I want to talk about, is if you're a Duck fan looking over at the Beaver fans, you've had your moments too. Okay, you had a basketball program that was on an NCAA tournament roll a few years ago that had three players who were suddenly under investigation for the crime of rape. And it was ugly because it's possible the basketball program knew and played the players anyway. And then later said, well, we were trying not to interfere with the police investigation. I was as disappointed with that as I am in some regards with this. And a lot of Duck fans defended the program at that time, I thought, blindly. So let's just step back a little bit from our allegiance as a fan. And maybe the truth is, we all agree it's a horrible thing. Sex assault is a horrible thing, whether it is molestation of a child or rape or any violent act, domestic violence even. We can all agree these things are bad. But what is it about why we defend our teams so blindly? Is it that you couldn't live with yourself if you acknowledged that this is horrific and I've cheered it? Or is it that you want it so badly not to be true that you will defend it with passion? I'm just talking about your sports allegiance now, not the facts of this case. Dre's in Portland. The number's 503-417-7575. Dre, be the voice of reason.
Jay, I'm not going to talk about sports allegiance, but I will say, no matter what, the issue would have came to light at some point anyway. Yeah. Whether it's this year, next year, in the kid's third year, hopefully, you know, if he does make it to pro baseball, it's going to come out. So, I mean, we have to deal with it. It's in front of us now. But we all know, and I'm sure that the young man knew, it's going to come. Even if he would have done the right thing and registered like he was supposed to and did all that, either way, it's going to come out, and it's going to be on the talk shows. It's going to be, you know, all over. So, you know, it's an unfortunate thing, but, you know, I don't care about the timing. It doesn't really matter, but yeah. Everything comes back to people, man. And I've learned that being 40-something years old now that you can do something 20 years ago, it'll come back to you. Thanks, Jay.
Especially if you're in the position that the kid's in, Luke Heimlich, where people are talking about him as a first or second round draft pick. I have no malice towards Luke Heimlich. I don't want him to burn in hell. It's not going to fix anything if he burns in hell. It's not going to fix anything if, you know, he fails in life and ends up homeless and on the street. That's not what I want for Luke Heimlich. I want him to look back when he's 90 and be like, you know what? That was horrible what happened and what I did at age 14 or 15. And I've spent the last 75 years feeling guilty and shameful and making the best of it. And I've not reoffended. And I've been a productive member of society. And guess what? I haven't talked baseball yet because it has nothing to do with baseball. Let's talk about that allegiance that you have as a sports fan and why it overrides your value system at times. 415-417-7575. Mike's in Vancouver. Go ahead, Mike.
Hey, John. You know, I brought up this point a couple of weeks ago about the difference in the cultures of different universities. And the really disturbing thing is, to me, is that OSU is really, really avoiding this whole subject. You know, I'm a Coug, and I can tell you the difference between a Husky and a Coug is, like, so far spread that it's really strange. And the reason I even called is because you brought up the whole ag thing, and students at WSU are so different than Husky students. And they just have a different attitude about things. And I'm really afraid that OSU is really trying to bury this and pretend it didn't happen. And it just makes me kind of wonder, you know, I mean, they had to know that somebody in the administration or even the teammates had to know. They had to know that something, even just in a locker room conversation, that this is what happened.
you know, and nobody told anybody.
Oregon State, you know, has a policy where all freshman athletes, their freshman year on campus, have to live in the dorms. Problem at Oregon State is they also have a rule that says a registered sex offender can't live in the dorms. So did Luke Heimlich live in the dorms or not? Did he work sports camps alongside kids? Did he do autograph sessions without any fans or parents knowing that their children were having an interaction with a registered sex offender? It's important stuff. And I don't care if he goes to Oregon or Oregon State. I've got three daughters. I want to know if my kids are having that kind of interaction. Leave it here.
This is the BFT with John Canzano.
So you heard during the update there that the Review-Journal in Las Vegas is announcing that, breaking the news that there's a fight between Floyd Mayweather and Conor McGregor could happen. It could be formally announced as soon as today. The question I have is, what's that undercard look like? Is it UFC or boxing? Is it a mixture? Do you get like a couple of really good boxing matches and then some UFC? Do you get some mixed stuff? What do we get in there? Cockfighting? I don't know. The undercard of that thing? A debate? How about another presidential debate? Should be interesting. We're talking about your fan allegiance. And for people out there, by the way, before I get to this, the phone number is 503-417-7575. I want to call attention to Mattress Firm. They've got their 4th of July sale on. And I know it's not the 4th of July. It's the run-up to the 4th of July. But if you are looking for a mattress, go to Mattress Firm. It's where I go. It's where my family shops. I was talking to my parents today. My parents are in town in the state of Oregon. And I said, hey, you need a mattress? You can go to Mattress Firm. There's probably one by your house in California. They're all over the place. They do a great job. They're the sleep experts. So if you're looking for a mattress, mattressfirm.com, or just walk into any of the Mattress Firm locations where you can get 0% APR for up to 72 months. That's interest-free sleeping, man. You sleep like a baby. It's important. I think sleep's important. And I say this because I've got a 13-month-old in our house. We've got a 3-year-old in our house who, by the way, the 3-year-old celebrated a birthday the other day. And she has continued for the last 4 or 5 days saying that it's her birthday and announcing to anybody that she sees that it's her birthday. I don't have the heart to tell her that her birthday has passed. In fact, it's a week ago that was her birthday. She told somebody yesterday, it's my birthday today. I don't have the heart to tell her that, hey, it's over. Moving on towards next year. But get yourself out to Mattress Firm where you will sleep happy because you save money. You tell me about your sports allegiance and why it is that people lose all sense of rationality when it comes to their sports teams. Portland Trailblazer fans, you're not immune to this either. I picked on the Duck fans and the Beaver fans. You had the Jailblazers, and there were some of you dogfighting, registered sex offender Reuben Patterson, marijuana at the airport, Rasheed Wallace breaking a record for technical fouls. There were some of you who were like, come on, man, get off their backs. Why do you lose all sense of your rationale when it comes to this? Alex is in Salem. What's up, Alex?
Hey, John.
How you doing?
I'm doing good, man. Good to talk to you again.
Good.
So I'm originally from back east, and I'm a lifelong Buffalo Bills fan. And you know what? I mean, even if next year came around and it was like we got all the way to the end and it came out that our quarterback guy destroying everybody was a sex offender or committed some sort of a sex offense for a long period of time, you know what? He needs to go. As hungry as I am for a championship at long last in Buffalo, he's got to go. And, you know, I mean, it's a personal thing for me, but the thing about it is it shouldn't be a personal thing. You shouldn't have to be a former victim or attached to this case in any sort of a way. It's just common sense. If you have a dream to play professional sports or college sports or any kind of sports, to be in the public eye, don't stick your fingers or anything else attached to yourself or anything unattached to yourself into 4-year-old girls. That's it.
Not arguing with you there, Alex. Thank you. It's personal to him. Shouldn't be personal. He's right. You shouldn't have to have like a personal experience. Like, I know people who have been affected by losing family members or being severely injured when it comes to drunk driving. Okay, let's just use that as an analogy. I know people who have lost family members in drunk driving accidents. You shouldn't have to lose a family member in a DUI situation to be able to sit back and go, DUIs are horrible. People should not be driving drunk. 503-417-7575. Billy's in Portland. What's up, Billy?
Hey, John. Just a couple of comments regarding Luke. You talk about your faith, Christianity, and pastor, and your church, and involvement, and I think that's great on your show. One thing, you might want to think about is, what if we wake up tomorrow and Luke committed suicide?
Horrible. That'd be horrible.
You know, you'd have blood on your hands with a lot of other people. And
Billy, come on. Billy, don't blame me for that. Don't blame me for having a stance on something that's going to be blood on my hands for not keeping Luke Heimlich's secret. I didn't break the story, nor should you blame the people who break the story. Don't do this, Billy. Come on, man. Can we just have it be what it's about? You know, Billy, I think you're a good person without even knowing you, because I can tell that you care about another person. I join you in this. I don't want Luke Heimlich to rot in hell. I don't want him to die. I don't want him to, I want him to live a happy, productive life where he makes the best of his situation. But I also, like the district attorney of Clackamas County who called into yesterday's show, I agree that this is a horrific crime. And it's not incumbent on the rest of us to not have an opinion on it or to give him a pass in order to make him more comfortable. That's where you lose me. Can I forgive the guy? I'm not there yet. Being honest, I've got three daughters. And it shouldn't take that, but I do. And I cannot get past the idea that I have to honor and think about the victim long before I think about the perpetrator here. But I'm talking about your sports allegiance. Why, if Billy's being real and his allegiance just is to human beings, then I'm with him on that. But if this is about Billy being a Beaver fan who was like, man, this isn't fair because I'm a Beaver fan, then I'm not with him. Bob's in Portland. Bob, help me out here.
Well, John, I think you hit it on the head there that, we're human beings, and that's what Billy was talking about. We're human beings, and we're all fallible, we make mistakes. So I don't know if this has been brought up on your show over the last a week now, but I think the universities and any other institutions, when this type of thing comes up, are missing the valuable lesson here, the two words that we always should think about, teachable moment. You know, how can we make this, like you did with Brenda Tracy, how can we make this, and I don't want to use the word positive because it's not, I don't want to make it overlook what happened, but, get him out to schools and start talking. The university, do something, get out in front of it to say, hey, we're going to take a stand and we're going to be proactive instead of trying to hide behind it. I think that's the best way to approach these things. Instead of, we understand what happened, now, what can we do to go forward? What can everybody learn from this? That's my take.
I appreciate that. It's measured. It's good. It's interesting. Oregon State President Ed Ray has got a meeting on the books tomorrow with Brenda Tracy. I know they're talking about other things, but I wonder if this comes up. Here's my problem, though, with the teachable moment thing. I don't know that, I don't know Luke Heimlich. I've talked to him once. And I don't know if he's ready to stand just at this age to stand in front of a group of kids and have a teachable thing to offer. I think if you are somebody who is listening to the show and you have taken this discussion home and talked with your family about the tug of war that goes on in a sports fan's mind when it comes to, hey, somebody I've been cheering and rooting for turns out did a horrible thing that might be unforgivable. I say might be because the forgiveness really lies in the heart of an 11-year-old girl who will deal with this for the rest of her life. Can I forgive him for something he did to someone else? I don't know that I can. So it's not really my place to be, you know, doling out that forgiveness. Do I wish him well as one of God's creatures? Sure. But I don't believe Oregon State should have even taken Luke Heimlich. Like, he should not be in uniform at Oregon State. And that's the bigger point. And if we just remove Oregon State, it's not, I'm picking on Oregon State here. A registered sex offender should not be playing any sport at Oregon or Oregon State or Portland State or the University of Portland. Can we start with that as a premise? If this had never happened, and I asked that in a room full of 1,000 fans, representative of each of those universities, would I have gotten blowback from anybody? Oregon State fan, ask yourself that. Would you have argued as passionately as you have for Luke Heimlich had I removed any hint or that it was an Oregon State Beaver we were talking about? What if it were a Duck? Would you be on the other side of this argument strictly because the uniform changed? If the answer is yes, then we could have a real conversation about how fan allegiance blinds you. Like, we all know it's emotion. It's emotional. This is all emotion. Sport is emotion. It's why we love it. It's why when I was, 9 years old, the San Francisco 49ers, who had gone through 2-14 and 6-10, they won the NFC when Joe Montana hit Dwight Clark in the right corner of the end zone, the catch. And I was 9 years old wearing my 49ers jersey, and I ran out the back door of my parents' house, and I ran until I couldn't run anymore. I missed the end of the game. There was like another, they had to stop the Cowboys after they kicked off. I missed it because I was just celebrating. Why? It was emotional. I had taken a beating at school for being a Niner fan, and now my team was on top of the world. So it's all emotion. Of course we get blinded. Of course we get misled. Of course we have to separate. I have to separate my emotions. I have to take off my green and gold glasses. I have to take off my orange and black glasses. You hear that all the time in the state of Oregon. Take off my Blazers goggles and see this thing straight. If I ask you today, should the Trailblazers sign a registered sex offender in free agency this summer? I'm going to guess 100% of you say no. If they signed a registered sex offender this summer, 30% of you might go, well, he deserves a second chance after he gets in uniform. That is weird to me. And simultaneously understanding. It just shouldn't be. I understand why it happens. It just shouldn't be. 503-417-7575. Follow me on Twitter. Kevin on Twitter says, I don't make long drives often, but I enjoyed listening to John Canzano BFT in the car today, except for the John Candy meatloaf slander. I know. That was kind of mean. And I went to make a comparison to a female actress that you wouldn't want to look like. And I felt like it was really unfair to anybody that crossed my mind. And I'll be honest, the first person that crossed my mind was Roseanne Barr. And I had her in studio. And she was so nice in studio that I couldn't sit here and make fun of her. But I was like, you know, if you're getting accused of looking like Meatloaf or John Candy or Roseanne Barr, you got a beef. But if somebody's like, you look like Kate Underwood, that's not a problem, okay? That's not a problem. Oh, I get accused all the time of looking like Jessica Alba. Nah, that's not a problem. That's not an inconvenience in your life. Like, to me, I get a lot of, there's this MMA fighter. People say I look like this dude is an MMA fighter. I don't really think so, but I get it a lot from, like, the 20-somethings. And then I'll get Dana White. Like, if I'm wearing a suit walking down the street. I was walking down the street in Manhattan one time wearing a suit, and somebody in a car was like, Dana White! And I'm like, no. Sorry. I don't know if that's a compliment or not. But for the guy, Alan Heckard, who lived in Oregon, who said he looked like Michael Jordan and couldn't live a life, dude, that's not a bad thing. Steven's in Sherwood. Steven, welcome to the show.
Hi, Mr. Canzano. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet, Steven. What's up?
Yesterday, you were talking to a couple of people about the Luke Heimlich, you know, the guy that's committed an abhorrent and heinous crime. But somebody called in and said, you know, you can actually be compelled to register as a sex offender if you urinate in public. Well, you kind of, like, didn't believe him. So I took it upon myself to Google it to see if it's true. Was in it, 11 states.
You was it you? Was it you who called in yesterday?
No, I did not call yesterday.
Was that you who called in and made that claim?
No, it was not, sir.
It was not you. Are you sure?
I'm absolutely sure, sir.
Sounds a little bit like you.
Hey, I'm a Buckeye. What can I do?
It was a police officer who called in after and said that he would be surprised that urinating in public would have caused you to be classified as a sex offender. I'm kind of guessing. I would bet that caller was the same. We could probably pull the sound. Maybe we'll do that for tomorrow's show. We'll pull the sound and we'll figure it out. I don't want to cloud the issue, but the caller yesterday called in and made the claim that there was a family friend who had pulled over to urinate. By the way, just get yourself to a restroom. And the family friend urinated, and he was within 100 yards of a school, and he became a sex offender. People always bring up crap like that when they're trying to be like, hey, not all sex offenses are bad.
Why were you looking at me when you said that?
Gliss, you're the producer of the show. That I have this thing with callers and their voices. I recognize your voice sometimes when you call back. I'm not calling that guy a liar. I'm not, because that'd be a mean thing to do. But man, it's almost the same time of day as yesterday. Very similar sounding voice. Maybe it's a friend of his calling back. I'm not calling you a liar. I'm just saying you're clouding the issue. And by the way, I was in a restroom yesterday, public restroom. Used the bathroom. There was another guy next to me who used the urinal that was next to me. We both went to wash our hands at the same time. And just at that moment, the bathroom stall where somebody had been in there doing their business flushed. And an older gentleman came out of the stall and without breaking stride, walked right past both of us and out of the bathroom without washing his hands. Now, the guy that was next to me, not a word was said, but we looked at each other and both kind of made a face like, what the hell? And then all he said as I gathered some, washed my hands and then gathered some extra towels to hold the door handle with, because I'm not touching that thing. All he said was, old people. Old people. Now, I'm not picking on you if you are a senior citizen listening to this show, but is it true that only young people and old people need to be reminded to wash their hands? If that's the case, then so be it. Find an older person and say, hey, be sure to wash your hands. But I take my young kids into the bathroom. That hand washing ceremony becomes a big deal. They love it. They love to wash their hands. I'm in a hurry. I'm like, come on. They're like, no, no, more soap. You know, if you've washed a 3-year-old's hands, this is an event. There's water everywhere. You're lucky if you get them out of there without having to change them. Jim's in Portland. Jim, what's up, man?
Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
I just wanted to raise the issue of only talking about the future for the young man. I'm totally on board with all of the things. You've been very balanced. But going forward, I think last week you'd said you wouldn't maybe kick him off the team. You wouldn't do whatever. I wouldn't play him next week. But if part of his rehabilitation is the ability to in the future play baseball, wouldn't that be okay? So I'd just be interested in your perspective on that. And thanks for being so balanced.
Yeah, I think here's where I stand on his ability to play baseball in the future. There are major league teams. The draft is ongoing. Curtis Rogers, has he been drafted yet?
No, we are in round 37.
Okay, of 40 possible rounds, he has not been picked. Here's what I say. If you're a major league team and you draft him and you live with that decision, But if you're a university, it's different. You receive public funding, taxpayers. You're identified as a university that has an alumni base. This is not a private entity like the San Francisco Giants or the Oakland A's who have a decision to make. It's the same as a company. Do I think the post office should hire sex offenders? Hell no. That's a public entity. Do I think your business should hire a sex offender? You do it if you can live with it. And that's how I feel about Major League Baseball. Now, I have to tell you about a website. I've been waiting all show to tell you about this. John's Waterproofing's got a website. It's called bettercrawlspaces.com. I'm going there right now as I'm telling you this. But what I can say about John's Waterproofing is they have been doing business in the Portland area, the Eugene area. They serve the entire Portland, Eugene, Beaverton, Vancouver, Salem areas. They are the experts on your crawl space and your basement. If you have standing water, you know you have a problem. So call John's Waterproofing. If you don't have standing water, you may still have a problem. If you see mold evidence, if you smell mildew, you may still have a problem. And if the air in your house is not healthy, the people in your house aren't going to be healthy. John's Waterproofing can help you with this. It's a great company with great employees. They are your trusted basement waterproofing, basement finishing, seismic retrofitting, crawl space encapsulation contractors. BetterCrawlSpaces.com for a free estimate or call them at 877-526-8141. That's 877-526-8141.